A new Facebook bug exposes 6.8 million users' photos. A new checking and savings account that pays a whopping 3% interest. Amazon's last-minute shipping deadlines for the holidays, plus the worst passwords of 2018. What's going on? I'm Rich DeMuro. This is Rich on Tech, coming to you today with the longer version of the podcast. Now, I had a great comment from a listener because I always said, I don't know what to call this version of the podcast. Normally, I do like a 10-minute podcast. This is more like 30 minutes because I talk about all the stuff that I think you should know about that happened during the week. Someone wrote to me on Instagram and said, you should call it Richer on Tech. So I would love to give you credit for that direct message to me, but I can't find your message. So anyway, whoever you are, thank you for sending that to me. I do appreciate it. And in the future, I will be much better about remembering who writes me and what they say. Let's start with the big story of the week, Facebook. Oh my gosh, another problem with Facebook. Can you believe it? Facebook is becoming sort of a privacy nightmare. So now the latest gaffe with this company is 6.8 million users' photos were inadvertently exposed to third-party apps. So it turns out that Facebook's internal team discovered a photo API bug. And an API is basically how different apps, like third-party apps, can interface with Facebook. So if you've ever used like Facebook Connect, or if you've ever done anything that an app uses Facebook to log in or connect with or whatever, that's what an API does. Well, there was a little problem with the API. Basically, even though you just logged in with Facebook, those third-party apps had access to all of your photos, even if you posted them or not to Facebook. So even if you just had them uploaded to Facebook, but they were private, these apps still had access to them, which is kind of crazy. This happened from September 13th to September 25th, 2018. So what Facebook is saying is that these apps didn't necessarily do anything bad with your photos, but the reality is it's not very nice to have your private pictures accessible by apps that don't necessarily need them. So this affects up to 1,500 apps built by 876 developers. And Facebook in a blog post says, "We are sorry this happened. We're working with these developers to delete the photos from impacted users." So yeah, so basically they have to call these app developers and say, "Hey, we know you have like access to all those photos. Can you please go ahead and delete those?" And if it's a reputable app, sure, they will probably do that and comply. But imagine all the apps that are out there that aren't so reputable and they use Facebook login and maybe they waited for an opportunity like this. So Facebook is really just having some major privacy problems in 2018. Thankfully, the year is almost over. But if you ask me, this was the year of the privacy issue with Facebook because basically, at this point, anything that you upload to Facebook, you cannot take for granted that it is private or safe or, you know, the public can't see it, even if you have your settings made so that only your friends see stuff. It just doesn't make sense anymore with this company. I love Facebook because it connects a lot of people in cool ways, and you really shouldn't be, you know, putting stuff on there that you don't want random people to see because there's always something like this that can happen. But in the meantime, if you want to know if you are one of the folks potentially impacted by this bug, you will get an alert on your Facebook newsfeed when you log in. This is not happening overnight, but it will happen soon. There's also a link that you can go to and you can check to see if you are one of the people that's affected by this. So I went to this link and it said that my account was not affected. So there's a little box. And I'd give you the web address, but it's like facebook.com/help/20063280087309. So kind of a tough web address to go to over a podcast, but I will put the link in the show notes. But when I went to this page, it did say there's a little box that says which apps may have had access to other photos of mine. And it says your Facebook account has not been affected by this issue. And let me tell you why my Facebook account's not affected, because I don't use Facebook login and I don't use it for this reason. Unless a site absolutely 100% requires me to use Facebook to log into them, I always set up my own username and password when I log into a website. And I think you should too. The reason being, when you log in using Facebook, those apps potentially have access to your Facebook data. even if they don't ask for data. So a lot of them back in the day just used to get access to everything. And then, of course, we had some of these privacy implications, like you saw with that big data breach with the Cambridge Analytica. And then Facebook kind of, you know, back in 2014, 2015, pulled the reins back a bit. So these apps only had access to certain things, like a photo app might have access to your photos. A standard app that you're logging into might just have access to your email address and your username and some other things like that. But the reality is, I don't like these apps to be connected to Facebook in any way, shape, or form, because look at this bug. This is proof that anything can happen, and any personal information on your Facebook account is at risk if you're logging in with these third-party apps. So always my advice is to create a unique login when you are logging in with apps. I know it's a bit more work, but it will come in handy, because if something ever happens, if one of these apps is ever breached or there's some kind of issue, you're insulated from that issue because you have a separate login. It's not connected to Facebook. Well, while we're on the subject of privacy and data, New York Times had a big article this week about how much data, location data, various apps are collecting on you and what they're using it for. So they did a big study and they found that 235 million locations were captured from more than 1.2 million unique devices during a three-day period in 2017. When you use an app, like let's say a weather app, right? Well, why do you think you're getting free weather from that app? It's not just out of the kindness of their heart. They are collecting as much data on you as possible, so that they can in turn sell that data to advertisers and marketers and build a more complete picture of who you are. And in the Times' case, with this little study that they did, they found that there was all kinds of things happening with your private data. The Times found at least 75 companies receive anonymous, precise location data from apps whose users enable location services to get local news, weather, and other information. So a lot of these apps that give you local news or local weather, they get access to your exact location. And when you install that app, it says, hey, we need access to your location. To the user, it sort of makes sense, right? Because you're getting your weather, you're getting your local news. So it would make sense that they need access to your exact precise location. If you were downloading a flashlight app, you would probably wonder why it says we need access to your location, even though back in the day, we remember that story where the flashlight app did ask a lot of folks for access to their GPS. And guess what? A lot of folks gave access to their GPS. So what happens when all this data is collected? Well, the companies sell it, they use it, or they analyze it to cater to advertisers, retail stores, and even hedge funds, which is odd, seeking insights into consumer behavior. So think about it. If you're an app, let's say I create an app, Rich DeMuro, I create the Rich on Tech app, and I collect location data from everyone that uses that app. Well, now all of a sudden, I can, let's say I have millions and millions of users, okay? So now I start seeing patterns of where those users go throughout their day. Now, let's say I just have patterns in a small city, let's say like a city I used to live in, Shreveport. And all of a sudden, you start seeing a lot of users frequenting a new section of town that has maybe one store there, but it's a really popular store. Well, now I'm Starbucks, okay? I want to build a new location in Shreveport. I go to my company and I say, hey, can I buy some data from you about where people are going in this city so I can figure out where to put my next drive-through Starbucks? Oh, sure, I'd be happy to sell you that information. I've got lots of data on millions of users. I know exactly where they are throughout the day. This area of town is cooling down. I see that less people are going there. This area of town where they're just starting to build stuff is really hot. And now you see the beauty of this data and why it's so valuable. So some of the companies that have been using this or collecting it, Weather Channel, that's one of the apps that they mentioned in there. Weather Bug. Let's see, there's another one as well. Sports app. But basically, they're saying of the 17 apps that the Times saw sending precise location data, three on iOS and one on Android told users in a prompt during the permission process that the information could be used for advertising. GasBuddy said that it could be used to share and analyze industry trends. So again, you have to be aware when you're downloading these apps, look at the permissions that they're asking you for. If you're thinking like, hey, I'm downloading a photo editor app and it's asking me for all these different permissions, my microphone, my location data, why would a photo editor app need access to that data? Don't grant it. And if the app doesn't work because you don't grant it, then get rid of the app. Find a different one. That's the beauty of the app stores, is that there's a lot of stuff out there. You just need to be aware. I mean, I get it. You sit there and you say, Rich, I don't really care if people know where I go. I agree. I don't really care either. But the reality is, just be aware of the information that you are sharing and how that information is used. To me, that's the most important thing. And by the way, I talk about this in my book, 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone, about looking through your location data under privacy and seeing which apps have access to your location. And there's several ways they can do that on iOS. Some apps ask for access to your location all the time, right? Other apps ask only while you're using the app. Now, personally, I like that much better, and I think that you should switch all apps that don't need access to your data to either off or access to your location. Just turn that off, or say only while using it. And you can find that under settings, privacy, and then location. And you'll see a whole list of all your apps and whether they want location or location data all the time or just when you're using it. Well, it's that time of the year when everyone is shopping online, and we have become so reliant on Amazon that we need to know exactly when we can order off this website until and when we will still get our free shipping or shipping in general to get it in time for Christmas or the holidays. So Amazon this week announced that all customers in the US can enjoy free shipping through December 18th. For orders that will still arrive in time for Christmas. So depending on when you're listening to this, that deadline is coming up pretty soon. Now that's free shipping. Now if you're a Prime member, you can get even faster shipping. So it says the majority of Prime members in the US can shop free one-day shipping or faster this year. And then of course there's Prime Now. I just put in my Prime Now order this morning. So I went to, they say shop local and do all this stuff. So I needed toner for my printer, which is sitting right behind me here. I've had this thing for a couple years. It served me well. It's a Brother printer. Well, I haven't ordered ink on this thing or toner for like, I don't know, last time I think it was like 2005, right? So I don't need it very often, but when I do, it always kind of creeps up on me. And so I needed it because of the book, and I was printing out some press releases so I can advertise my book, and it's just not good. It's like running out, and the printing doesn't look very good. And so I went to Office Depot, and I looked for my toner, and I just searched my Amazon app to see what the model number was from the last time I bought it, and I saw how much it was, which was like $53 for toner. And I go into Office Depot, and guess what? The same exact toner is like $75. And, you know, I don't mind paying for things. Obviously, I don't have to, like, you know, it's right there. It's right in front of me. But to pay $20 more just for something that I can literally get shipped to my home for $20 less seemed a little crazy to me. So what I do, I looked online, I searched the app to see if there was a coupon code. I found one for 20% off, which I was willing to do, but that was only for online orders. So I was like, not for in-store. So I didn't have a coupon, no way of getting a discount. I was not about to pay $20 extra, even though it was sitting right there in front of me, because there's principle, right? And by the way, I pay $120 for the entire year of Amazon shipping. So that's like almost a fifth of the price I pay for Amazon shipping for the whole year, right? So I asked the woman in Office Max or Office Depot, I think they're the same company now. I was like, hey, will you match an Amazon price? She's like, nope. And I was like, all right, well, there goes that. So what do? I come home. This has been 3 days ago, by the way. Come home, order Amazon Prime Now. Literally, they will have it to my house within 2 hours for free shipping. It's $54, you know, $53.99. And this is the reality we live in now. These companies just can't compete with Amazon. Even though I'm standing there in the store with the item in hand, it's cheaper for someone to come drop this thing off to my house and I will still save $20. Pretty insane. Anyway, that's a side note, but just wanted to talk about the little delivery deadlines for Amazon. December 18th is the last day for free shipping with no minimum purchase amount for all customers. So even if you don't have Prime, you can still shop until December 18th and get free shipping with no minimum purchase. December 18th is the last day for standard shipping, free for Prime members. December 22nd, last day for free 2-day shipping for Prime members. December 23rd, last day for 1-day shipping, free for Prime members in eligible areas. If you live in a big city like Los Angeles, like I can get that. December 24th, last day for same-day delivery, which is free for Prime members in certain areas. Again, if you live in a bigger urban area, you will see that on certain items. It's not on every item, but where I live, definitely in Los Angeles, free same-day is definitely a possibility. But you have to order by 9:30 a.m. local time or earlier. So no matter where you live, New York, L.A., somewhere in the middle, same-day delivery, December 24th, you have to order by 9:30 a.m., which means you have to be up early. And that's for Prime. Now we're talking Prime Now. December 24th, Prime Now has free two-hour delivery windows reserved exclusively for Prime members in eligible areas. And you can order up until 9:15 p.m. local time. I mean, this is crazy that you can order until 9:15 p.m. and still get something within 2 hours on December 24th. That, my friends, is really last minute. December 24th, you can, Whole Foods stores, Amazon Books, Amazon 4-star, Amazon pop-up device kiosks will be open on Christmas Eve. And then December 25th, if you've really bottomed out and you did not find anything by Christmas Day, you can order an Amazon gift card or an Amazon Prime membership for someone on Christmas Day and just give them that little printout of paper that says, hey, I thought of you, but I couldn't really get to the store and buy you anything. Moving on now, this is an intriguing new offering from the company named Robinhood. This is an app that's sort of known for stock trading and commission-free investing. So now they're introducing checking and savings accounts, okay? It's called Robinhood Checking and Savings. And yes, there's a million checking and savings accounts out there from all kinds of banks, but this one is different because you will earn 3% interest on your money in both checking and savings. And before you think about all the different catches associated with this account, basically there are none. There are no fees. You get access to over 75,000 free ATMs, 24/7 customer service, and yes, there's even a debit card. Now, if you remember the podcast a couple weeks ago, I talked about T-Mobile Money. They had something very similar. I think they were giving 4% interest on their money. So let's see, was it T-Mobile Money? I think it was 4%. Let's see. Yeah, 4% interest, but they had a catch. That was only for T-Mobile customers, and it was only up to $3,000. This 3% on Robinhood checking and savings is on your entire account balance, whether it's in checking, savings, combination of both. Interest compounds and is paid out daily. So if you have $8,000 in this account, that's $240 a year. They say the average American household has $8,000 in the bank, which I think sounds like a lot. That's a pretty decent amount, considering we've heard so many stories about people don't even have like $400 to cover a car repair. So if people have $8,000 in the bank, that's pretty good. So this Robinhood checking and savings has no minimum balance, no monthly fees, no overdraft fees, no foreign transaction fees. You get a debit card that can be used at 75,000 ATMs across the country, which they have them in major stores like Target, Walgreens, 7-Eleven. You can also use the app to pay bills, deposit and mail checks, and chat with customer service 24/7. So I don't know what that means. If you maybe you can call them as well. I hope you can. So if this sounds good to you, you can get a debit card in one of four designs. You can't just sign up though. That's what's a pain about this. You have to get in line. So they're doing that whole kind of like, you know, sign up and then get your spot, and then they will eventually tell you when you'll get access to this account. If you invite your friends, you'll move up the line, you'll get access faster. They say they're going to send these debit cards out in January 2019. So I think this is very intriguing. Personally, I'm not ready to switch just yet. I do online banking and I love it, but you know, it's one of those things that's really tough to just switch midstream. You know what I mean? I mean, you can't just sit there and switch everything over. Maybe you can start with like a small account, maybe move over some of your money, see how it works, and eventually move over some more. But it's one of these things that takes a big leap of faith, because this is a company that, yes, they've proven themselves with the investments and they've done really well and they're well funded, but you never know. It's not a Chase. It's not a Wells Fargo. It's not some of these online banks that, that you know, you have kind of been around for a while. So one to follow, and if you want 4% on your money, it's definitely not a bad deal. Just one of those things to think about. All right, let's see here. We got a question from Deborah Harris. She wrote in on my website, richontech.tv. My mom is 93. She's never used a computer, can barely operate her old flip phone. My father died 2 years ago. Sorry to hear that, Deborah. He was a tech guy. My brother dearly misses being able to send photos to our parents. He's looking for a device that would allow him to send photos from his iPhone 10 to a screen of some sort so that mom could see the photos. He can call her and tell her which button to push or what to say to access the device. Any suggestions? Thanks, Debbie Harris. Debbie, I think that the Google Home Hub would be the best possible solution for you. Google Home Hub is basically a screen. It's kind of like a tablet on top of a speaker. So your mom would be able to ask it questions like what's the weather like or, you know, anything, really any question that you could ask Google, she can ask of this device. But when it's not in use, she can have it displaying pictures. And the best part about the Google Home Hub is that if your brother sets it up properly, and it's very simple to do, he can have pictures automatically taken from his Google Photos account and displayed right on the screen. So he can do that. He can make an album on his iPhone. It only takes one time to set it up on her end. But basically, once he sets up that album on his phone, he can do two things. He can automatically have it pull in any picture of a certain person or recent pictures. So let's say he had a kid that he's taking pictures of. Google will notice the kid's face in those pictures and automatically apply it to that album. And by the way, it applies some smarts, so it only picks out nice pictures where your kid is smiling and it's well lit, things like that. That's not always perfect, believe me, because I have this feature and it's not perfect. The second thing is he can make a specific album that's just shared with your mom, and any picture that he adds to that album will actually just go right into there. So I think that's going to be the best case scenario. That's kind of like the solution that I think is pretty easy. Facebook Portal does something similar. So does the Amazon Echo Show. But personally, I think that the Google Photos feature on the Google Home Hub is really the easiest one out there. Good question. This was kind of interesting to me. I won't spend a lot of time on it, but Taylor Swift at a recent concert was using facial recognition to scan the audience for stalkers. So this happened at the Rose Bowl concert back in May here in California. So they set up this giant kiosk, which had some video screens showing behind the scenes clips from Swift's rehearsal for the show. But what happened was when you looked at that screen, it would actually scan your face and compare your face against a list of known stalkers that were stalking, or I guess are actively stalking Taylor Swift. So all these pictures would be sent back to a command post in Nashville, which it doesn't say if they automatically compared the faces or if people were comparing them. But that's kind of interesting, huh? You don't think about that at a concert. All right, let's move on to another email. And this is from Susan Gaffney. She says, "Hey, Rich, I appreciate all you do and the help you provide those of us who sometimes find it difficult to navigate through tech land. I have a new iPad with the Pencil. I want to use OneNote to take a lot of handwritten notes. And although I don't love it, the Pencil interfaces well with the program. I'm desperate to find a calendar planner that can handle handwritten notes on the calendar as well as additional notepad feature. There doesn't seem to be a ready-made program. People talk about importing PDFs and doing a workaround. I have to admit, I don't really understand. Are you aware of any iPencil-friendly calendars, especially ones that have the features of a robust planner?" Susan, I am not. In fact, I use a good old-fashioned... you guys can't see this on the podcast, but I'm holding up my nice, big, thick planner that's written out because I like the same thing. I like to write down notes about my day and things I need to do and have that calendar as well. I would love to be able to do this on an iPad. Love, love, love. I have not found an app that lets you do it. Apple's calendar app should theoretically let you do that, but it doesn't. Maybe they'll update it for the Apple Pencil. That would be very helpful. But what a lot of people are suggesting is what you said, the whole PDF. So you download a calendar PDF that has both the dates and maybe some places to write, and then you can upload it to another app. I found this one called, it's from Ginger Labs, Notability. So you can upload your PDFs into there and write on there as well. That might be the way to do it. That might be the best solution right now until we come up with something a little bit better. Instagram has a new feature, walkie-talkie voice messaging. This is really cool, and if some of you have messaged me on Instagram, you might have noticed that I've already started to use this to reply to you. So it's just like a walkie-talkie. When you go to reply to someone on a direct message, you can press and hold the new little microphone button, record a voice message that's up to 1 minute long, and then send it off to the person on the other end. That person can listen to it at their leisure, and it does not disappear. So it stays there forever. And the other thing you can do with this, a little trick, is you don't have to actually press anything. So the next time you're replying to someone's direct message on Instagram, all you have to do is lift your phone to your ear. You'll hear a little beep. You can start recording. And then when you put your phone back down, it will have the little recording. All you have to do is press send and you can send it off. So I can see how this is cool. It's a lot of fun. It's just one more way to chat with your friends. And it's a lot faster than trying to type out messages. Instagram messaging has become really popular, especially now that they allow those little one-tap emojis, you know, like the 100, fire, smiley face, so you can reply to someone's story really fast. So that is making a lot of messages out there. I get a ton of these things every day. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, how do I reply to like a happy face emoji? I don't really know, but I'll do my best. Email from Brian Lasko at richontech.tv says, "Hey Rich, I'm writing to say thank you for reporting on Visible. I switched to the service and I am loving it. I'm retired, so money's tight. And with this service, I'm saving $43 a month. I gave up Spectrum a couple months ago because of cost increases. At that time, I went to an unlimited cell phone plan to keep primarily with my online banking and online news. But with Visible, I can do all of this for much less. A double win. Thanks again, Brian. P.S. Visible also sent a super nice early adopter gift." Wow. Don't know what that was. But Visible, we did this story on KTLA. It was a super popular story because this is a company owned by Verizon, right? So you get an amazing network and it's $40 a month for unlimited service. Talk, text, data. Nothing's ever slowed down. So it's not like it's throttled after like, you know, 20 gigs of use. But here's the thing. The only thing you need to know about it is that the speed for the service is capped at 5 megabits per second. So if you're listening and you're like, "Rich, what the heck does that mean? What's 5 megabits per second? Basically, the Verizon network can, you know, the average is about 20. The, you know, you can get as fast as like 100 down. So it's not slow, but it's just enough speed to do all the typical stuff you need to do. So you may see a little bit more buffering sometimes, like if you're watching, you know, something on YouTube or whatever, but realistically, you're not. The only time the 5 megabits limitation would come into play is when you're downloading or uploading huge files. So for that reason, I do not recommend Visible for the budding social media stars out there. But if you are the average person that is checking email, sending texts, surfing the web, watching Netflix, watching YouTube, sending pictures, uploading pictures, posting to Instagram, watching stories, you will be 100% fine. It is $40 a month, taxes and fees included, and it runs on the Verizon network, so it is super duper good. You get their entire network. It's not half their network. It's not a portion of their network. It is everything. The thing you need to know about it is that you right now need to have an iPhone, and basically everything happens through the app. So that means that you there's no stores to go into. You have to bring your own phone. Has to be unlocked so it can work with this. Or Verizon phone, I guess. I mean, you just check to see if your phone works. You just pop in a special code from your phone on their website. It'll tell you in 2 seconds if your phone is compatible. But I've had so many people email me and tell me they love this service. It has worked great for them. I don't think I've had one person that said it's bad. So $40 a month. Check it out. It's called Visible. And I think the website is, let's see what the website is, Visible. Oh, it's just visible.com. That's pretty easy. So check it out. There's a little mystery surrounding it because people are like, how is this too good to be true? But yeah, join in December and get a $50 Amazon gift card on us. Wow, that's cool. So maybe that's what Brian got, was the $50 Amazon gift card. So join in December, get a $50 Amazon gift card if you join Visible. Finally today, Bad Password Habits Die Hard, says Splash Data. And they came up with their 8th annual worst passwords list. And as you could imagine, so here, how did they come up with this? They evaluated 5 million passwords that are leaked on the internet. And they're finding that, yeah, lots of people use the same predictable, easily guessable passwords. And using these passwords will put people at substantial risk of being hacked and having their identity stolen. You think it can't happen to you? Do not use these passwords, okay? Number one, 123456. That is still the top worst password. That was the same as last year. Number two, password. Yeah, that's the number two worst password. Number three, 123456789. Oh, just adding three more digits would make it way more secure. 123456789, taking away that one digit. Let's see, any interesting ones? Sunshine is number 8. QWERTY is number 9. I love you, number 10. Princess, number 11. Admin, welcome. 666666666, football, ABC123, monkey. Oh, wow. This is an interesting one. Number 20 on the list is new. It is exclamation point, at sign, pound sign, dollar sign, percentage sign, up caret, ampersand, and asterisk. And by the way, that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 on the keyboard with the shift key held down. Folks, do not use these passwords, okay? Use a different separate password for every website that you log into. I know it takes some time to create these things, but use an app like LastPass, use an app like Dashlane, or use an app like iCloud built into your phone. You have Keychain on the iPhone and you have Google Smart Passwords on the Android. So again, if you're going to go with the native password generator app inside your phone, so if you have an iPhone, it can generate these passwords and remember them for you, but only do that if you are on a Mac computer using Safari and an iPad and an iPhone. If you're using a Windows machine, it's not going to be so pretty, so don't do that. And on the Google side, Google has the same thing built in where it can remember your passwords. Use that one if you're going to use an Android phone, Chrome on your computer, which is, you know, pretty much everywhere on all platforms. So that one's a little bit better. But again, I think one of these universal ones like a LastPass or a Dashlane is a little bit better because they work across everything very easily. So there you have it. All right, let me talk about my book, 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone. I got to tell you, folks, I am just amazed at the response to this book. Clearly, I have hit a nerve with you folks, and you're buying this book in droves. It is unbelievable. This book is necessary, and people are figuring that out. They're buying it in multiple copies. They're buying three copies at a time, saying, Rich, I'm giving this to everyone. I'm giving it to my parents. I'm giving it to my friends who ask me questions about the iPhone. The reality is, we have this phone, the iPhone, that is an amazing device, and people don't know how to use it. They're intimidated because of it. They're afraid of how to use it. They don't want to break anything. They don't want to mess something up. So guess what? They don't just sit there and explore all the features. So when you have a book like this, it leads you through the various features. It explains how they work in a very easy to understand way. And clearly people are responding to that. So I am so thankful to everyone who has purchased a copy of this book. I do appreciate the support, but the thing that really resonates with me is that clearly this is necessary in our world. So if you're not familiar with the book, it's all about the stuff you need to know. I updated it for iOS 12. It's in paperback, so you can now read the book on a nice comfy couch while you have your phone right there. Check out all the cool tips. Try them out as you read it. Before it was just on the electronic edition. Now you can get it in a Kindle edition and a paperback. This was a revision plus an update for iOS 12. So you're going to learn everything you need to know about iOS 12, like creating an emoji, taking control of your notifications, screen time, which if you haven't set up, definitely recommend doing that. If you haven't set up screen time for your kids, definitely recommend doing that. I talk about setting up a second phone line, changing the brightness of the built-in flashlight. Did you know you could do that on your iPhone? You can turn your iPhone into a magnifying glass, probably the most popular tip I've ever shared in my life on TV and on the internet. I talk about iCloud and how to free up storage on your phone. One of the things I hate about the iPhone, that's I see this all the time, but those little Wi-Fi pop-ups that's like, hey, do you want to join this Wi-Fi network? And people just never turn it off. They swat that away for years without turning it off. Control what your kids are doing, how to stop double paying for apps and movies. So did you know that if you have a bunch of different devices in your house, you don't have to double pay for those apps or movies that you purchase? Once you set up family sharing, believe me, you can get all those apps and movies on any device in your house and it's all free as long as you paid for it once. I can't believe people double pay for apps still. In fact, people are still using the same iCloud username for husbands and wives because they don't know how to like kind of separate things and figure it out because they want to share their apps. But yes, you can do it without sharing the same iCloud name. Also, I tell you how to cancel a subscription, which is really important as well, because on the iPhone, it's really easy to subscribe to stuff. And sometimes it's a little bit tricky to know how to cancel those. So I walk you through it. 101 Handy Tech Tips for the iPhone, available now in paperback and in Kindle editions on Amazon. There is a promotion right now. If you buy two copies of the book, Amazon will actually give you $5 off. So if you want to do that, just add two copies of the book to your cart and use code GIFTBOOK18. GIFTBOOK18. That expires on December 21st. That is not my code. That's an Amazon code. You can use that for any books you want in the Amazon bookstore. There are some restrictions, so definitely check out that code and the restrictions it has. But if you buy two books, $20 or more, whatever, $20 worth of books, you can get $5 off with the code GIFTBOOK18. Again, expires December 21st. richontech.tv/book if you want to learn more about it. Thank you so much to everyone who has hopped on board and purchased a copy. It makes a great holiday gift. I am confident of that. Anyone in your life that you think needs help with the iPhone, 101 handy tech tips for the iPhone on Amazon right now. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. Hope you learned something. Hope you appreciated it. If you did, I'd love for you to share the podcast with your friends. Take a screenshot of you listening to it on your phone. Share it out on social media and be sure to tag me. I'm on Instagram at RichOnTech. I'm on Twitter at RichDemuro. I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/RichOnTech. You can find links to everything I talk about here in the show notes. Have a fantastic week leading up to the holidays. This is it, folks. Thanks so much for listening to the show. This is Rich on Tech. I'm Rich DeMuro. I'll talk to you real soon.